Good morning, everyone. I'm not sure exactly where we stopped. Marie-Ange, you tell us. Yes. There's only one edition, 609, at the bottom. We'll begin with this line about the avatars. So this is part of the gospel of death. Savitri has been shown a symbolic, ideal world, a very alluring and beautiful world emerging from the darkness like the promise of dawn. There, everything is beautiful and appealing, but impermanent, always fleeting, can't be grasped. So when we began this canto, death tells Savitri that this ideal world where nothing ever becomes real, this is the world from which your longings have been born, your hope of immortality, your belief in your divine soul, your love for Satyavan, which you claim is something immortal. All that is just illusory, passing. It can't last. So the last sentence we read at the bottom of page 609 goes, how shall the ideal tread earth's dolorous soil, where life is only a labor and a hope, a child of matter, and by matter fed, a fire flaming low in nature's grate, a wave that breaks upon a shore in time, a journey's toilsome trudge with death for goal. That is how he wants us to see our life, meaningless, impermanent, without connection to any higher truth. Yes, Sonam. That's why what he says is so convincing to us, and it's what we normally believe, no? But gradually Sri Aurobindo is going to give his answer through Savitri's mouth. He's going to tell us not these truths which are destructive and negative, but truths which give us the hope and even the possibility of a higher life. Manoha, will you start?
The avatars and lived and died in vain. Vain was the sage's thought, the prophet's voice. In vain seemed the shining upward way. Earth lies unchanged beneath the circling sun. She loves her fall and no omnipotence her mortal imperfections can erase. Force on man's crooked ignorance, heaven's straight line, or colonize a world of death with God. O traveler in the chariot of the sun, high priestess in the holy fancy's shrine, who with a magic ritual in Earth's house worshipes thy dear and eternal love. What is this love thy thought has deified, this sacred legend and immortal myth? It is a conscious yearning of thy flesh. It is a glorious burning of thy nerves, a rose of dream splendor petaling thy mind, a great red rupture and torture of thy heart, a sudden transfiguration of thy days. It passes and the world is as before.
Thank you. So as Sonam says, it's very easy for us to believe this. That's how we often feel, that the avatars have come and gone. But what has changed? All these great wonderful words and calls, even we might have glimpsed some shining upward way, but meanwhile earth lies unchanged beneath the circling sun. And the reason why she's unchanged is because something in us, in earth, loves this state of fall, clings to it. And because of that, no omnipotence, no all-powerfulness can force on man's crooked ignorance heaven's straight line. It can't colonize this world, this material world of death, where everything has to die. This cannot be colonized with divine beings, with gods. I think it's clear. Anybody would like to ask anything? Even when we feel love, it's so wonderful. It may transfigure our days, but it doesn't last. And the world remains just as it was before. So it's very easy for us to agree with death on all these points. Yes, Don.
You said, what about avatar? You know, we have no meaning and so on, but avatar is an incarnation of the Lord, God. But what does death think the avatar is?
Well, he says the avatars, they have come. They've come to earth. They've gone away again. And what has changed?
So he's better than the avatars.
No.
He says that they don't. Their coming has no effect on this world of which he is the ruler. This is the gospel of death. Yes, Sonam.
About love, what he says, he's saying basically it's just your hormones and
yes.
Feel all nice and all, but actually then
yes.
Be
that's what he's saying. Yes. Sorry? Which line is it? Sorry?
In the mind.
A rose of dream splendor, petaling thy mind. So a rose has many petals. So he says this love, it's as if it opens in your mind in the form of a wonderful dream. A splendid dream with many petals. No, your mind becomes like a rose. And it's an intense rapture for the heart, but it can also be very painful at the same time even. No? And falling in love does have that effect of heightening the senses and making us more aware of everything. It's a transfiguration of our days. But it passes, and then the world is just as it always was.
This is basically person-to-person love, but universal love is different.
Yes, it's going to be very interesting. We can identify very easily with all that he's telling her about the vanity of the ideal, whatever ideal it is. How is she going to answer him? That is, I think, why the mother was so particularly interested in this book. Because in it, Sri Aurobindo makes use of this dialogue between death, in which he expresses all his negativity, and with Savitri, who expresses the truths that save. He is able to show us the inadequacy of our ordinary human assumptions. Yes, her ideal love for another human being, for Satyavan. So he goes on describing love. Rosa, would you read? Yes. Tying.
Tying teeth to eternity. And yet, how brief and quiet, how soon it spent. This treasure boasted by the gods of man, this happy closeness as of soul. This honey of the body's companionship, this heightened joy, this ecstasy in the veins, this strange illumination of the sense. If Satyavan had lived, love would have died. But Satyavan is dead, and love shall live. A little while in thy sad breast, you need.
Until
his face and body fade on memory's wall.
Thank you. So he's able to evoke love very convincingly, no? This ravishing edge, there's as if a blade or something sharp, a ravishing edge of sweetness and of pain. There's a thrill in its yearning, even when it's not satisfied, that makes it seem divine. It seems like a golden bridge across the roar of the years, as if the time is a violent ocean. But there's this golden bridge which carries you over it, and it's a cord tying you to eternity. It seems like that to you, but in fact, how brief it is, and how frail, how soon this treasure is spent. He says, love is a treasure. It's a treasure that the gods have wasted on man. The gods have given us this treasure, but we don't know how to use it. No? And he describes it so beautifully, this happy closeness of soul to soul. This honey of the body's companionship, this heightened joy. This is the thing, this heightening, intensifying of experience, ecstasy in the veins, this strange illumination in the sense, as if all experiences are lit up. But if I hadn't come and taken Satyavan's soul away, the love would have died. And because Satyavan is dead, that love can live a little longer in your sad breast, in your heart, until other faces and other bodies come, and then the memory will fade, no? Very convincing. Amitonji.
When love breaks suddenly into the light, at first man steps into a world of the sun. In his passion he feels his heavenly element, but only a fine sunlit patch of earth, the marvelous aspect, took to heaven's outpost. The snake is there and the worm in the heart of the rose. A word, a moment's act, can slay the god. Precarious is his immortality. He has 1,000 ways to suffer and die. Love cannot live by heavenly food alone. Only on sap of earth can it survive. For thy passion was a sensual want refined, a hunger of the body and the heart. Thy want can tire and cease or turn elsewhere.
Thank you. So this too seems true to our experience. No? When love suddenly breaks into our life, we may seem to enter a sunlit world and feel something of our divine element. No? But death says it's only some nice sunlit patch of earth, of matter, that has taken on the light or the appearance of an outburst from higher worlds. In fact, the snake is there, the poisonous destroyer, and the worm in the heart of the rose, the beautiful rose, can get eaten up by that worm, that caterpillar. Mm-hmm. And very, very quickly, love can get destroyed by something quite small, your love for another human being. A single word, an act, a moment's act, can slay the god. It can happen. So his appearance of immortality is very precarious. It can be easily destroyed. Love has 1,000 ways to suffer and die. But then he says that love cannot live just on that heavenly food. It nourishes itself on the sap of earth, the life force that is here in the material world. It needs that. Again, he must be speaking about the love between human beings. No? He says that this kind of passion is only a refined or sublimated form of longing of the senses, a hunger of the body and the heart. And you can get tired of that hunger. No? It may turn somewhere else for satisfaction. That's where we stopped, I think. No? We'll go on. Lorraine?
For love may meet a dire and pitiless end by bitter treason or wrath with cruel wounds. Separate or thy unsatisfied will to others, depart when first love's joy lies stripped and slain. A dull indifference replaces fire. Or an enduring habit imitates love, an outward and uneasy union grasp, or the routine of a life's compromise, where once the seed of oneness had been cast into a semblance of spiritual ground by a divine adventure of heavenly powers. Two strive, constant associates without joy, two egos straining in a single leash, two minds divided by their jarring thoughts, two spirits disjoined forever separate.
Thank you.
This was my marriage.
Hmm?
My marriage was like this.
Many marriages are.
It's not so bad.
Many marriages are. But he gives several alternatives, no? It was very discreet.
Yes.
So one may have a very bitter end to a loving relationship, a dire and pitiless end by bitter treason, when one or other or both the partners feel terribly betrayed. Or there may be anger, things are said or done in anger which wounds the relationship and destroys the love and that separates them. Or it may be just that one or the other or both get bored. No? The unsatisfied will turns to others when first love's joy has already been stripped, enjoyed, and killed. And then if the partners stay together, or even without all these things, a dull indifference may replace fire. Or at the best, maybe an endearing habit. There's something comforting about the relationship which imitates love. If circumstances compel, then an outward and uneasy union lasts, or the routine of a life's compromise. So once perhaps the gods had sowed the seed of oneness into the human heart, and that gives a semblance, an appearance of some spiritual ground, that a seed has been cast and something wonderful will grow there. But what emerges is two people in disharmony, striving. They're always together, constant associates, without joy. Two egos straining in a single leash. They're tied together, they can't separate. Two minds that are not in harmony. They have different thoughts and the thoughts clash. The spirits are not united. They're disjoined, forever separate. This is what can happen all too often in our world. Patty, would you read? No. Patricia.
Thus, if the ideal falsified in a man's world, trivial or somber disillusion comes. Life's harsh reality stares at the soul. Heaven's hour adjourned flees into bodiless time. Death saves thee from this and saves such a man. He now is safe, delivered from himself. He travels to silence and felicity, calling him not back to the treacheries of earth and the poor, petty life of animal. In my vast, tranquil spaces, let him sleep in harmony with the hush of death.
Thank you. So because all these things happen, he says, this is how the ideal gets falsified in man's world, in some trivial, unimportant way, or in some dark way, disillusion comes, and life's harsh reality stares at the soul. And that hour of heavenly joy seems to get postponed forever. It flees off into bodiless time. So here I am, death, I'm saving you from this, and I'm saving Satyavan. Now he's with me, he's saved from himself and from you. He's traveling to silence and felicity. He keeps presenting this as the solution. Sorry? Yes, then it will be peaceful. Well, we might feel this, that death is a solution, no? Yes. So now I've taken him away. Don't you insist on calling him back to all this unreliability of the earth and the poor, petty life of animal man. He's moving on to a higher state. In my vast, tranquil spaces, let him sleep in harmony with the mighty hush of death, where love lies slumbering asleep on the breast of peace. Helmut.
And thou go back alone to thy frail world. Chastise thy heart. To see thy nature raised into clear living heights, the heaven-birth youth and unimaginableness. For when thou givest thy spirit to a dream, soon hard necessity will smite thee awake. Purest delight began, and it must end. Thou too shalt know. Thy heart no anchors remain, thy cradled soul moored in eternal seas.
Thank you. Chastise usually means to punish, but it's punish with the idea of reforming. So I think here he means purify your heart with knowledge and take off this hood of illusions and see how things really are. Raise up your nature into clear living heights, and then you will be able to see things the way that the heaven bird, the soul from on the heights, sees things on those peaks, those high levels that you haven't imagined. See from there how it really is. Because, and we know this, no? When you give your spirit to a dream, soon hard necessity will smite thee awake. Something will come and wake you up from your beautiful dream. Purest delight had a beginning, and it must end. But if you do what I'm telling you to do, if you chastise thy heart with knowledge, then you too shalt know. Thy heart, no anchor swinging, not looking for something to catch hold onto. An anchor, no, it's what the ship has to fasten itself to the bottom of the sea, so that it has
it doesn't move around
too much. It has something which fixes it to a safe place. No? You are trying to anchor your heart to Satyavan. But if you will let go of that anchor, you'll be able to experience your cradled soul moored in eternal seas. Then you will realize what is your true anchor. You will feel how safe you are in these eternal seas, not attached to any earthly attachment.
Mm. I want to tell you down about my experience 20 years ago. When I opened my eyes after the brief accident, 21 days in the coma, I had a question to mother, why you come back? Why you bring back me? Mother tell me, clean your two karma, clean perfectly. And now you understand your mission there.
Mm.
But mother, when you bring back me, she tell me, you are not finished your mission. And for that, she bring back me. But, and now, after 12 years, I tell you, really, I understand. My clean from the past karma is bad. Sorry, but it's like that. True knowledge in the spiritual level. You understand why you are alone, why you living like that, why. True knowledge in transcendence.
Yes. I also find these lines extremely moving. Thou too shalt know thy heart, no anchor swinging, thy cradle soul moored in eternal seas. This is an experience which, in a way, we are all longing for. Yes, Patty.
Well, I must say that the film we saw last night in the ashram totally contradicts what Yama is telling here.
Yeah. What did you see?
It was a film called The 33, which is based on the Chilean mining disaster that occurred in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And I was watching it at that time on the television. It went on for 69 days. It was a seemingly impossible situation. For those of you who don't know, for the 100 years of the history of this mine, they had had 5 collapses of the mine, and nobody had ever been rescued. So in this case, there was one man, at least as they were showing the film, who had the faith that these people could be gotten out from there. There was one man above and one man below who had this faith, one miner. And so between the two of them,
they did
after 69 days, they were rescued in a seemingly impossible situation.
Mm.
And there was one line by this ministry, mining minister, which I really loved, which was absolutely sure of Indonesia.
Yeah.
He said, the chief engineer had given up and said, this seems to be impossible. And Lawrence says, the impossible, it just takes longer. It reminded me of that line in Savitri, the impossible is a sign of things to be. And also about giving up Satyavan, you see, this is what they were all saying. The engineer was already, he had already written a memorial, and he was going to present it to the relatives and everything, because it was like 16 days, and they were told the men had food for 3 days. But there was one pastor down there who gave them faith, and there was this one miner who said, we're going to get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And he kept saying it again and again so firmly that everybody else had to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
It was a real life story, and it's like after 60 years of Sri Aurobindo finishing this present state, the Divine One is saying, to me it was symbolic, because there was one aspect of the film, I must say, which I think they left out. And that is what I recall seeing on the news broadcast. The president of Chile came to the rescue site and prayed together with the people before they started the operation. And this they did not show. But a few points they reminded people of God, and then they scribbled, the miner scribbled at the end, God was with us. At least they gave him a little credit.
Yeah.
But I thought it was so interesting, because everybody was saying it was hopeless and that there was no possibility. But it was symbolic to me, because Jesus Christ, of course, was crucified when he was 33. And the Chileans are Catholic.
And possibly what happened that day showed that the collective consciousness of the world is for the first time together.
is very powerful, but all the days that the people were there, all over the world, everybody was looking at us.
Yes.
And also these four songs are something powerful. It seems that it's the first time in life people look at walls, you know? That it's the first time on earth that everybody in the world were looking at this, coming up, and this every day, you know, was the kind of everybody pushing to that. Mm-hmm. I think that was something.
Yes, and it was like the Christian sadhana, or the life of it, had penetrated matter, because it was down, it was down 200 stories beneath the earth.
So I can only say that there's something here in what death says, that when there's some disaster, something very painful, seems to be impossible to overcome, that can give us the experience of feeling our cradled soul moored in eternal seas.
Yeah,
it can be just these terrible happenings that give us that experience. So here, of course, he's acting as a tempter to Savitri. He wants her to give up and go away. And whatever he can say to make her do that, he's going to say it. No? And we don't have to take him too literally. But every now and then, because Sri Aurobindo is his spokesman, his writing his lines, there are such amazingly moving lines.
How do you not feel that to marry or something like that? You know, marriage is not like a thing which one can overcome or one can progress in one. It's like the way it has taken, like it is the comment of the Yama. But I was following the line, it is so powerful and the force is not like a positive, it is a negative force. It is trying to, bring back from the
Yeah, he's telling her, don't hope, you know. It'll be much better if you go back now. And you cultivate knowledge, you cultivate divine knowledge, and then you will have this experience. But that experience can come in other ways also. Yes. Yes. It's moving. Yes. Yeah. Thank you. You don't understand these two lines at all. He says, thou too, you too will have the experience, you will know, so long as you're not attached or seeking any attachment, you will have the experience of the way in which your soul is safe in these eternal seas. It will always be anchored. It will always be moored. I mean, anchoring is what you do out in the open sea, and there's nowhere to moor. Mooring is when you are tied safely up in some harbor. So that our souls actually are always safe, always moored in eternal seas. But we don't realize that because we want this and that. We want to anchor ourselves to things that we think will bring us happiness or fulfillment in the world. And he's saying, let go all that, and then you will feel how free you really are and how safe and always protected you are. He is saying this, I feel, in a kind of cynical way, but nevertheless, There's a deep and moving truth in what he says. Yes, yes. We'll go on. Let's continue to where Savitri replies to him. Jocelyn.
Then on the side of the my mystery is one with my father next to me in the world, forget I think the spirit's ways to force. Forget the wearing circle of diapers. Forget the trouble, the struggle, and the pain. Vex people of grace to which we're begun. And the world grows forth like clusters of fat. And great burning force voyage through the sky of mind. And time and experience fall to the rocker of life and soar into more time.
Thank you. It's the call to nirvana, no? Dissolve yourself. Let everything go. Happy nothingness. Worldless calm when there's no world anymore.
It's the easy way out, no? It's the way of traditional spirituality. If you don't want change on earth, you just let go of everything here. But the Upanishad says that renounce and then enjoy.
Joy. Yes.
That's much more
difficult.
Yes.
But when he says thy fruitless spirits waste of force, he doesn't say thy spirits fruitless waste of force. It's curious. it means that
your spirit is wasting all its strength without getting any fruit back. Yeah, you can. Yes.
I want to get into him. I want to suffer to him.
That's not fair.
All right, Patty, you go ahead.
Okay, Savitri, go ahead.
Yeah.
Savitri replied to the dark power, as dangerous music now thou findest, O dead, melting thy speech into harmonious pain, and flutest alluringly to tired hopes. Thy falsehoods mingle with sad strains of truth. But I forbid thy soul to forbid thy voice to slay my sword. My love is not a hunger of the heart. My love is not a craving of the flesh. It came to me from God, to God returns. Even in all that life and man have marred, a whisper of divinity still is heard. A breath is felt from the eternal spheres, allowed by heaven and wonderful to man, a sweet fire rhythm of passion, chance through love. There is a hope in its wild, infinite cry. It rings with callings from forgotten heights, and when its strains are hushed to high-winged souls in their empyrean, its burning breath survives beyond the rapturous core of suns that flame forever pure in skies unseen, a voice of the eternal ecstasy.
Thank you.
Shalavan, I got something before that I didn't ask. I don't know if it's my English, but this emerge for me is kind of funny because the soul emerges something that goes up. And he said, souls emerge into mortality. They use immortality.
The souls emerged into mortality. They came out into the material universe.
But emerge doesn't mean kind of going up, not in English. Because in Spanish, it has some different meaning. Because emerge, but this emerge is kind of going up.
Before it was. The souls were merged with eternity, with timelessness, with immortality, and then they emerged in the material world. They came out into. I mean, it's such a wonderful description of the beginning of the universe. No? The worlds broke forth like clusters of fire flowers. Wonderful.
That line means like that there is a hope in this world, infinite strength.
Sorry?
That says there is a hope in this world, infinite strength, that meaning?
Line?
here at the top. Yes, this is passion, no? A sweet fire rhythm of passion, of intensity, chance to love. And there's a hope in its wild, infinite cry. There's the hope of, I suppose, eternal love, even in a material world. She says, that's the hope that's there in this. And she says it's allowed by heaven and wonderful to man, this promise, no? Even when afterwards we get disappointed. No? So this cry that is there in the experience of love, it's ringing with callings, summonses from forgotten heights, heights of our own being that we don't remember.
That was the theme of that film last night, because hope was what they needed. And the man who was brought out first was about to become, he had become a father, he didn't, hadn't met his child yet, and he named her Esperanza.
Mm.
And our Spanish-speaking people know it means hope. Because in this other thing, there's no hope, no? You just give up. You don't give up all your attachments and go into the eternal. But there's no hope for men.
That's why she says, now with this music, with these things that you're saying now, Dev, you're fluting like Krishna, alluring, calling the tired hopes. The tired hopes. But what you are uttering, she says, are falsehoods mingled with sad strains of truth. So that's what's so dangerous. It's there's some sad strains of truth are mixed in with the falsehoods, and that's what makes the falsehoods so convincing. And yeah. And it's a dangerous music because it's harmonious. This you're saying it's all useless and this and that, but you're doing it in a somehow an attractive way. Sorry?
Someone says,
what's the use?
Yes.
Of course, I don't want to say that all pacifists are like that.
Pessimists.
Yes.
There's also a promise of some peace, you see?
Yes.
So the jihadis are saying you're going to get everything you couldn't get on earth, you're going to get in heaven. You have to just die.
So she notices, she says, what you're trying to do is to slay my soul.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm forbidding, I will not allow that to happen. No? And she states her knowledge, her experience, that my love, whatever you may say, is not a hunger of the heart. It's not a craving of the flesh. It's something that has come to me from God, and it's going back to God. It's actually God that I am loving in Satyavan. And then she speaks generally. This is the message that Sri Aurobindo is giving to us. And it's a very, very subtle and beautiful message. Even in all that life and man have marred, everything that has got spoiled and gone wrong, still, there's a whisper of divinity, and a breath is felt from the eternal spheres. So we can say human love is something unworthy and renounce it. Human hope, human nobility, courage, whatever it is. But in that intensity which human beings put sometimes into their soul movements, that's allowed by heaven. It's something wonderful to man. And there's a hope in that. And then what she says is so amazing. When there are high winging souls who go away from the earth and they no longer experience that earthly passion and intensity, in their heavens, in their empyrean, still the breath of that passion is surviving. It's not destroyed. And in fact, it becomes the core, the rapturous core, the ecstatic core of suns, eternal suns that are flaming forever pure in skies unseen. So there's something immortal and divine and ultimately pure and true. That element is there, even in earthly passion. Mm. You will read, Narendra? Yeah.
221.
221,
yes. Mm. One day I shall behold my great sweet world, put off the dire disguises of the thoughts, unveiled from terror and disrobed from sin. At ease we shall draw near our mother's face, we shall cast our candid souls upon her lap. Then shall we grasp the ecstasy we chase, then shall we shudder with a long sought thought. Then shall we find heaven's unexpected strain. Not only is there hope for what else pure, the violent and the darkened deities leap down from one breast in rage to find what the white gods have missed. They too are safe. A mother's eyes are on them and her arms stretched out in love, desire, the rebel sons.
Thank you. Anything to share or to ask about these amazing lines?
One question I have is, one day I shall be born my great sweet world. And then she said, at peace we shall draw near. She starts by I shall, and then she goes to we.
Yes, she goes to we human beings. Hmm.
She's saying that both good and evil will both go to the mother. She's saying that.
This is a very paradoxical element also in Christ's teaching that many Christians find difficult to swallow. And Supprem has asked the mother about these lines, about the violent and darkened deities. They leaped down from the one breast, no? In rage to find what the white gods had missed. And he asked the mother, the pure gods, no? So what have they missed? She said, the joy of conversion. You know, if you're pure from the beginning, and you remain pure through the whole time, you don't have that extraordinary joy of coming back, of turning back. And there's something like this in, it's not the same thing, but in Indian mythology we have something similar to this. We are told, for instance, that the villains in the traditional stories, for example, in the Ramayana, there's that queen of Kaikeyi who insists that her son shall be crowned instead of Rama. You remember? And because of her, because Rama's father has made a promise to her, Rama has to go to the forest and Sita has to get kidnapped and all these terrible things have to happen. So in one of the versions of Ramayana, I think it's one of the old Tamil versions, it tells at this juncture in the story that before it all started, Lord Vishnu called everyone together and he said, I'm planning a great drama on earth. But in that drama, one person I'm going to incarnate as Rama, but one person is going to have to be the villain. And as long as Rama's name is remembered, that person's name or the name of that person's character will be remembered and hated and vilified. And nobody wanted that job. No. So the soul who came forward and said, "For you, Lord, I will do it." She was the noblest soul of all. It's different. It's not what is being said here. But I think it's something important to remember. Sorry.
But when it says, "One day I'll behold the world unveiled from terror, and this world from sin," I think that day can be soon if we fulfill what's in the next line. If we draw near our mother's face. I was reading the Little Prince. Maybe most of you know this children's story, The Little Prince. So this fellow has crashed in the desert, and this airline pilot, and this being appears from another planet. But actually, he tells what's the problem of humanity, but he doesn't give the solution. So I feel like I want to write a story called The Little Princess. And she comes and says, I've been sent from the Divine Mother in the world of soul, and I've come to this planet to change you people, to tell you how to live, and I'm not leaving. Because at the end of The Little Prince, he goes back and, you know, you just look at him and the stars and the dream of all this wonder. But no, she's come to stay here. So I thought that's what because actually, Mother was born in France, but how many French people know the Divine Mother? Mm. So she's a little princess, and they're what we're looking.
And
yes, please, a little louder, Mariage.
I think the question you are trying to explain is that somebody who is true all his life, okay, he's with God and everything, he has a true moments of joy. But somebody was bad and did bad things and killed people, and all of a sudden, a miracle happened, he changed. And then
that's a special joy.
It's that mistake of joy that one was always who never failed. So the white.
That's what the white gods had missed.
So I've always been pure. So
this line 222 is not clear to me. Put off the diet, discuss the denial, one day I'll sweet the word, then she says, the dire disguises of the God.
Yes. I think Sri Aurobindo says we can't make humanity responsible for all the things that are wrong in the world. There are cosmic powers who have given rise to these dark, terrible disguises that souls put on when they come into this world. From it.
It's my part in it. So yes. It's not a movie theater. It's
you are a participant, yes.
I'm a participant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we have to stop falling for the disguises.
Yes.
Be lured by a young man.
But even when this word that Mariage pointed out, appeased, something will happen to us. We will be put at peace. So that we can cast our candid souls, our pure, clear, sincere souls in the mother's lap. That's something will happen. Something has to happen to us before we can do that. And especially for the violent and darkened deities, they have to undergo a conversion. But still they are playing their role in the world, and we have to somehow recognize that.
It seems that the one that
And the last two lines it says, no, they too are safe. A mother's arms are on them. A mother's eyes are on them. And her arms stretched out in love desire her rebel sons. I think that's a good note to stop on for today. Special lines. We'll hear Mother reading some lines. She only reads one line from this canto, a few lines from the next one.
Then feels a calm, inexorable voice. This is the world from which thy yearnings came. But Savitri answered to almighty death. Oh, yes. I have triumphed over thee within. Oh, death, not for my heart's sweet poignancy, nor for my happy body's bliss alone. I have claimed from thee the living Satyavan. But for his work and mine, our sacred charge, our lives are God's messengers beneath the stars, to dwell under death's shadow, they have come, tempting God's light to earth for the ignorant race.
Thanks to Sri Aurobindo.